Today on The Journey.
I'm asking you today, are you willing to develop a friendship that penetrates to the core of your souls? Are you willing to take a risk with another person to be vulnerable? God has called us to do just that.
Do you know who your true friends are? Those you can count on to be strong and weak with you in every season of life. Well, today, Ron Moore continues his examination of the qualities that secure the best of friendships. Listen and learn so you can find them in yourself and others. And if you desire a deeper walk with God, we want to send you a copy of Ron Moore's booklet based on this sermon series. In its pages, you'll find a vibrant portrait of the great I Am. It's available for a gift of any amount, and you'll find it at ronmoore.org. Listen for the details later in the program. Now here's Ron with part two of the message, Characteristics of True Friendship, on The Journey.
I want to begin with a song. Now I'm going to sing it, just going to speak it. I want some of you left when I get through. It's a song I'm sure you've heard before. It's kind of a depressing song. It was written by John Lennon and Paul McCartney, sung by the Beatles in 1966. You've sung it before with them, I'm sure. Listen to these words. Eleanor Rigby. Eleanor Rigby picks up the rice in a church where a wedding has been, lives in a dream, waits at the window wearing a face she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Father McKenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. That's the most depressing part of the song for me. No one comes near. Look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Then the last verse. Eleanor Rigby died in a church and was buried along with her name. Nobody came. Father McKenzie wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave. No one was saved. All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? I'm not going to spend my time exegeting this song this morning, but let's think through it just for a moment. Eleanor Rigby, when she was among us, she had her mask on. Remember, she kept her face in a jar by the door. So if someone came to her home, she put her face on, her mask. And when she left her home, she put her mask on so that it all looked fine. And it's amazing to me that a lot of the people I talk to and counsel, when they say, I have no friends at the church, they're the last person I would expect to have no friends at the church. Father McKenzie doesn't have a message that's very relevant, does he? Eleanor Rigby goes to church. Maybe there she expects to find some relationship. There was a wedding there the night before. She picks up the rice. She wasn't invited. And when she goes, she hears a sermon that doesn't connect. No one hears it. In the end, Eleanor Rigby dies alone. Father McKenzie walks from the grave, just another funeral. No one was saved. And the church, the community of believers, makes no impact on the world. We are looking at characteristics of friendship. And we are evaluating the friendship between two men in Scripture, between Jonathan and David. And we want to find out from these chapters what it means to develop a friendship that is a godly friendship, and that is a meaningful friendship. And we also want to see how we can be a friend, how we can give back in a friendship so that it's not just a relationship where there's a one-way road. So we're looking at chapter 20. Now let me just give a quick review to catch us up. Saul was Israel's first king. Due to his disobedience and his unrepentance, God rejected him, and he has anointed a man named David, and God calls David a man after his own heart. David has been confirmed, the one God has anointed, and Saul is very jealous of David and is trying to kill him. During this same time, Saul's son Jonathan develops a very intimate, a very deep friendship with David. They are kindred spirits. Chapter 18, verse 1 tells us that they became one in spirit. Jonathan loved David as himself. Well, Saul did not share that love for David. He saw David as not only an immediate threat to his throne, but a future threat to his kingdom, and he is intent on killing David. In chapter 19, he runs David out of Jerusalem to a little town where Samuel lives, and there David finds some solace, some encouragement in an old friend named Samuel. But it's not long before Saul learns of David's whereabouts, and he comes to get him again, and only because God stops Saul in his tracks, as we learned the last time, does David have an opportunity to escape. And that's what's happened here as we open chapter 20. David has just escaped. Look at verse 1. Then David fled from Naoth to Ramah, and he went to Jonathan and he asked, "What have I done? What is my crime? How have I wronged your father that he is trying to take my life?" Now, please note, this is David. He is the king elect, and he is not calmly asking these questions. He and Jonathan are not sitting down over a cup of coffee. This is a panic question. What have I done? What is my crime? Why is your father trying to kill me? We'll see later that there is confusion and there is fear and there is doubt in David's mind. Jonathan's first response is, "David, I don't know what you're talking about, because my father tells me everything that's going to happen in the kingdom, both great and small. And if he was trying to kill you, I would be the first to know it." But David said, that's not the case. Look at verse 3. David took an oath. He said, "Look, Jonathan, I swear this to be the case. Your father knows very well that I have found favor in your eyes, and he has said to himself, 'Jonathan must not know this or he will be grieved.' Yet as surely as the Lord lives and as you live, there is only one step between me and death. I am at death's door, Jonathan. Your father is after me." Verse 4, Jonathan says to David, "Okay, if that's the case, whatever you want me to do, then tell me. I'll do it." So here's the plan. David says, "Tomorrow is the new moon festival. It is both a civil and religious celebration. And as it is at every festival, I am to come and I am to eat at the king's table along with your family. But so here's what I want you to do, Jonathan. I'm not going to be there. I'm going to be hiding off in the field. And when your father says, 'Where is David?' then you tell him that my brothers asked me to come and celebrate this festival with them, with my family in Bethlehem. If your father gives a positive response to this, great, I'll know that I'm safe." Look at verse 7. "But if he loses his temper, you can be sure he is determined to harm me." So Jonathan agrees with the plan. And here's how the news is going to be communicated. Look at verse 18. "Then Jonathan said to David, 'Here's the way I'm going to communicate to you, whether it's thumbs up or thumbs down. Tomorrow is the new moon festival. You'll be missed because your seat will be empty. The day after tomorrow, toward evening, go to the place where you hid when all this trouble began and wait there by the stone of Azel. I will shoot 3 arrows to the side of it as though I was shooting at a target. And then I will send a boy and say, 'Go find the arrows.' If I say to him, 'Look, the arrows are on this side of you, bring them here,' then come, because surely, as the Lord lives, you are safe. There's no danger. But if I say to the boy, 'Look, the arrows are beyond you,' then you must go, because the Lord in his sovereignty has sent you away. And about this matter you and I discussed, remember, the Lord is witness between you and me." So you got the picture? the feast comes, and David, the first day, is not at the table. Saul says, well, he probably has a good excuse, so he doesn't say anything the first day. But the second day, he notices David's absence again. Look at verse 27. The next day, the second day of the month, David's place was empty again. And then Saul said to his son Jonathan, why hasn't the son of Jesse come to the mill either yesterday or today? And Jonathan answered, David earnestly asked me for permission to go to Bethlehem. He said, let me go because our family is observing a sacrifice in the town and my brother has ordered me to be there. If I found favor in your eyes, let me get away to see my brother. And that is why he has not come to the king's table. Now notice Saul's reaction. Saul's anger flared up at Jonathan and he said to him, you son of a perverse and rebellious woman. Don't I know that you have sided with the son of Jesse to your shame and to the shame of your mother? As long as the son of Jesse lives on this earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Now send and bring him to me, for David must die. Jonathan says, why should he be put to death? What has he done? But Saul hurled a spear at him to try to kill him. And then Jonathan knew for certain that his dad was trying to kill David. A father speaking to his son. First, he says, you are perverse. Literally, you are bent. You are twisted. And then he says, you are rebellious. You're not doing what I have asked you to do. And since I'm the king, you're not only rebellious, you're a traitor. Then he says, you are ashamed to yourself and you are ashamed to your mother. And then he says, lastly, you're a fool. Don't you know if David lives, you are not going to take the throne from me? Don't you know if David lives, you're not going to reign as king? And if those cutting, penetrating words were not enough, he took up a spear and threw it, trying to kill even his son. Well, Jonathan was not a slow learner. He realized that his dad was intent on killing David. And so the plan is carried through. The arrows are shot. The boy is sent out. He says, the arrows are beyond you. And David knows that his life is in danger. And then look at verse 41. After the boy had gone, David got up from the south side of the stone and bowed down before Jonathan three times with his face to the ground, a sign of homage, a sign of honor. And then they kissed each other and wept together, but David wept the most. Jonathan said to David, go in peace, for we have a sworn friendship with each other in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord is witness between you and me, between your descendants and my descendants forever. And then David left and went back to his hometown. Now let's go back through this chapter and determine some characteristics of friendship. As a quick review, last time we learned that true friends are kindred spirits. They have the same purpose for life and the same passion for God. We learned that they have a mutual love for one another. And we learn that true friends are loyal. And if we would want to take the time, we could support them again from this chapter. Kindred spirits, mutual love, and loyalty. Let's move on and consider three new characteristics of friendship. Here's the first one. True friendship is a place of refuge. Now, I don't know about you, but there are times that I need to go to a place of protection, a place of safety, a place of encouragement, a place of comfort, a place of refuge. Look at verse 1. David's life is in danger, and he flees from the danger, and who is the first person he goes to? He went to Jonathan. When he was at his wit's end, when he was fearful of his life, when he didn't have any place else to turn to, he turned to Jonathan. Jonathan was his refuge. Jonathan was a safe harbor. My question is, do you have that person? Are you that person? Even within the 12, Jesus had three close friends, Peter, James, and John. And at the Mount of Transfiguration, at that special time, who was with him? Peter, James, and John. In the garden, who did he ask to go pray with him, although they fell asleep? Peter, James, and John. Jesus Christ, God in the flesh, needed refuge in friends. Martin Luther, the great reformer, a bold man, and if you read his writings, an outspoken man, brave man, had his Philip Melanchthon. One writer says this, Philip Melanchthon was Luther's Jonathan during the days of struggle and persecution. He had become so fully convinced of the truths explained and proclaimed by Luther that their two souls were knit together in a lifelong friendship. Melanchthon was a modest man, and he had none of the boldness and daring of Luther. Luther owed much to the calmness and gentleness and wise counsel of his colleague, who did his best to keep the reformer's zeal and fervor within its proper bounds. If you've read Billy Graham's biography, Just As I Am, you'll know that from the very beginning, he has had Cliff Barrows with him. In fact, the first crusades were called the Billy Graham and Cliff Barrows crusades, and Cliff Barrows is still with him today. You see, people who are making an impact, people who are doing something for God, need a place of refuge. And so let me ask you, do you have that place? Do you have that friend? Second characteristic is this. True friendship is a place where we can be vulnerable with each other. As I read chapter 20, I am convinced that David is going through a dark time of his life. It's not just that he's running from Saul. I believe he is emotionally distraught, wondering if he's really to be the king. He is wondering, I believe, has he sinned? Has he done something wrong? Saul was rejected because of his sin, and I think David is wondering, what have I done? I thought God had me pegged for the new king. Listen at his rapid-fire questions as he goes to Jonathan. Jonathan, what have I done? What is my crime? How have I wronged your father that he's trying to take my life? What have I done? Tell me. And then look over at verse 8. If I am guilty, then kill me yourself. Why hand me over to your father? Now, remember who David is. He's a king elect. Just killed Goliath. Popular man. Songs written about him. All of Israel loves him. A great commander. Successful in all he does. And here he is at a time in his life when he is beginning to doubt how God is working. You ever have those times? Is there ever confusion in your life or fear in your life or doubt that God's really in control? Was for David, and he had to have someone he could be completely vulnerable with. He had to have someone he could talk to. He had to have someone he could open up to. He had to have a place where he could take off his mask of commanding the soldiers. He had to have some place where he could take off his mask of a leader of the people. And he had to know that as he shared his heart, that person would listen and think nonetheless of him. Do you have that place of vulnerability? How vulnerable were David and Jonathan with each other? Well, turn over to 2 Samuel chapter 1. It's now years later, and Saul and Jonathan have just been killed in battle. And David hears of it, and look at chapter 1, verse 25. David grieves, and he writes a lament that all of Israel is to learn. And here's part of that lament. Look at verse 25, just the end of it. How the mighty have fallen in battle. Jonathan lies slain on your heights. I grieve for you, Jonathan, my brother, for you were very dear to me. Your love for me was more wonderful than that of a woman. how the mighty have fallen, the weapons of war have perished. Now let's stop there for just a second. Some liberal commentators today will go to this verse and say that David and Jonathan had a homosexual relationship. That is absolutely not the case. Number one, if they had, in the Old Testament, they would have been stoned. And number two, their heterosexuality is shown in their own marriages. David had many wives. We don't know how many wives Jonathan had. So that's not the case. But my point here, getting back to our characteristic, is David is completely vulnerable, and both of them open themselves up to each other. Here's a third and final characteristic. A true friend reminds us of God's plan. And maybe I could say it better like this. A true friend puts the spiritual perspective to our life. Sometimes we can't see it. I don't think David could at this point. He is running for his life. He is confused. He is fearful. He is doubting God. But Jonathan comes and puts the spiritual perspective back to it. 1 Samuel now, chapter 20. Look at verses 13 through 16. But if my father is inclined to harm you, may the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if I do not let you know and send you away safely. May the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. God is no longer with my father. May he be with you. But show me unfailing kindness like that of the Lord as long as I live, so that I may not be killed. And do not ever cut off your kindness from my family, not even when the Lord has cut off every one of David's enemies from the face of the earth. He is saying, David, no matter how close death looks to you right now, no matter how fearful you are, no matter how confused you are the next king of Israel. God has anointed you and he has appointed you as that person. You're not going to die no matter how close death seems. A true friend puts life back into its spiritual perspective. Place of refuge. Do you have that place? Place of vulnerability. Can you go there? A person who reminds you of God's plan. Do you have that person in your life? Are you praying for that person in your life? Are you being that person? I'm asking you today, are you willing to develop a friendship that penetrates to the core of your souls? Are you willing to take a risk with another person to be vulnerable? Are you willing to find refuge in another person? Are you willing to give yourself to another person? It's not easy. It takes work. But God has called us to do just that.
And please stay with us. Ron returns in a few moments with a preview of our next time together. Also, we invite you to order a copy of God in Real Life. From the humble plea of a barren woman's heart to the very heart of God. From the plains of battle to the court of a troubled king, Ron Moore paints a scriptural picture of the Lord of majesty and mercy, the God who is and who is working in your life. You'll see in its pages the three primary attributes of God that color every event you experience. And in the seeing, you'll discover his transforming features in places where you least expect them, the broken, the sinful, and the victorious places. God in Real Life is yours for a gift of any amount when you visit ronmoore.org. Again, that web address is ronmoore.org, or you may call 724-731-2018. That's 724-731-2018. Your gift today will help keep the journey on the air, developing followers of Jesus Christ. Now here's Ron with a look at our next broadcast.
Sometimes the road gets pretty long, doesn't it? Sometimes the pack gets pretty heavy. Sometimes the burdens are right there. Sometimes it seems like on this journey our legs are going to buckle. And it seems like that we cannot handle it alone. And we can't. And that's why God developed friendship. For someone to reach over and take the burden, carry it for a while, so we can regain our strength who can be strengthened in God.
We hope you can join us for that message next time. And we invite you to order Ron's uplifting booklet, God in Real Life. Its teaching will enable you to see the God who is and who works in you. You can get your copy for a gift of any amount when you visit us at ronmoore.org, or you may call 724-731-2018. That's 724-731-2018. By the way, if you miss any of the messages in this series, you'll find them on the front page of our website at ronmoore.org. And if the journey has brightened your day and deepened your walk with Christ, please tell your friends and family about our program. Also, keep in mind that the journey relies on your generous donations to remain on the air, developing followers of Jesus Christ. Your gift today will be deeply appreciated. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join Ron Moore next time as we walk together on the journey.